Good morning to everyone. It's great to be up with you all here in the Front Range today. Now, you may be wondering about that special music video. No, I'm not with the England Tourism Board, but I do feel that those images and that video will tie in with the message that I'd like to bring you today. Now, my mother lives back outside of Philadelphia in an independent living complex. We were just back to visit her earlier this month. And when this COVID outbreak started, she sent me some testimonials, which I'd like to share with you right now. Breaking news. Wearing a mask inside your home is now highly recommended, not so much to stop COVID-19, but to stop eating. Then there's this. I stepped on my scale this morning. It said, please practice social distancing. Only one person on a scale at a time. And there's this one. Never in a million years could I have imagined that I would go up to a bank teller wearing a mask and ask for money. And finally, there's this testimonial. Mom wrote, I was in a long line at 7:45 a.m. today at the grocery store that opened at 8 a.m. for seniors only. Well, a young man came from the back of the parking lot and tried to cut in at the front of the line, but an old lady beat him back with a cane and back into the parking lot. So the young man returned and tried to cut into the line a second time. This time an old man punched him in the gut, kicked him over, rolled him away. Well, as the young man approached the line the third time, he said, look, if you people don't let me unlock the door, none of you will ever get into shop. Well, on a more serious note, and we certainly do appreciate those times we get to spend with our parents, especially as they begin to age and get older. But just wanted to, again, we just found out about this last night, Mr. Hoosier, that your mom passed away about a week ago now, and our condolences on that. Do remember quite well when your mother and father came out and visited us at the Frisco Church about a year and a half ago, and really appreciate those words that were posted on the Friday night update last night. Really felt like I got to know a little bit more about your mother and appreciate that and know that she will be missed. Well, back in March, the President of the United States was giving one of those press conferences updating the American people on the COVID outbreak. And he said, and I'd like to quote, he said, every generation of Americans has been called to make shared sacrifices for the good of the nation. And now it's our time. We must sacrifice together, and we'll come through this together. It's the invisible enemy that's always the toughest. The invisible enemy. For those of you who have Bibles with you today, I'll ask you to turn with me to the book of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 3 and verse 1, and we'll look at some words of wisdom from the wisest man who ever lived, King Solomon. Verse 1, to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to reap, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. And now dropping down to verse 8, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. Well, it's that last verse, verse 8, that I'd like to focus on today. Here in the year 2020, there are not many left alive to tell this tale that I'd like to discuss with you. But I do think you'll find that it will relate directly to the situation that our country has been in over the past 4 or 5 months. Now, back on Memorial Day weekend, a couple months ago, my son and I were in our local village market in Edwards, picking up some groceries, and while we were there, I happened to notice at the checkout this June 2020 edition of National Geographic, The Last Voices of World War II, 75 years after the end of America's deadliest war, survivors share their stories. Maybe you can see here on the cover, that's Lawrence Brooks. He's 110 years old, the oldest known living survivor of World War II. My dad was part of that effort. He died about 2 years ago. My dad was in the second wave of the U.S. Armed Forces that landed on Utah Beach, Normandy, France, 1944. I had an uncle, Uncle Jack, who was also involved in that effort. He was in the U.S. Marines. Now, Uncle Jack raced down to the recruiting station the very day after Pearl Harbor was bombed. He fought bravely at Guadalcanal, then at the beach landing in Tarawa, the invasion there. My Uncle Jack got shot up pretty bad. He did survive the war, but he did also carry lead in his body for the rest of his life. Well, as you've probably guessed, I'm going to be talking just a bit about World War II today, and I'd like to zero in on one specific battle from that war, again, which I think will relate to everything that we've been going through here in 2020. And to introduce that battle, my dad's parents were English. They were from England, so I do tend to be a bit of an Anglophile. And Dad had a cousin. His name was Tony Cowdery. My wife and I met Tony over in England on a number of occasions. He was quite a jolly, colorful fellow. He was a published author. He had a remarkable collection of memorabilia up in his attic to the Lord Admiral Nelson, like his own private museum. Tony also passed away a few years ago, but something rather curious about him, he harbored a very intense dislike for anything German, for the German people. See, on one of those bombing raids in what was known as the Blitz back in World War II, Nazi planes would fly up the Thames River, and they'd be guided by the lights of the city. Back then, they didn't have satellite or GPS guidance systems. So if it happened to be a cloudy night or overcast, sometimes they would just drop their bombs indiscriminately on the surrounding villages. One of those bombs hit cousin Tony's house down in Kent. As a result, he was semi-crippled for the rest of his life. On one of the visits there, I remember him showing me a little tiny ship. He was quite the skilled craftsman. He'd carved that from one of his own bone fragments that was a result of that bombing. So cousin Tony was an innocent casualty of what was known as the Battle of Britain. Now, this summer marks the 80th anniversary of that battle. It took place in June, July, and August, reached a climax in September of 1940. I do think this is quite an inspiring story, and I do think there are parallels that can be drawn with our own recent circumstances of fear, and of isolation, and of lockdown. This battle was very important to the survival of Western civilization, but more importantly than that, more importantly than just a history lesson, to those of us here today at Sabbath services, what are some of the spiritual lessons and principles that we can learn from that experience? Well, last September, my kids and I were privileged to tour the British Isles. And while we were in London, we saw a remarkable exhibit. It's called the Cabinet War Rooms. Maybe some of you have been there as well. These are underground bunkers that are exactly the same as they were in 1940 with all the original maps and the original pins. And these underground bunkers, right in the area of Big Ben and Parliament, is where the British were defending themselves from the nightly bombing raids over Britain and over London, known as the Blitz. But there was a poster there that read, and I think there's a lot of truth to this, said, "Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few," meaning the men who fought in that battle. Well, a little over 1 year ago, Beyond Today published this cover story, D-Day plus 75 years, what should we learn? And what I felt was an excellent editorial by Mr. Ashley was entitled "When Dreams Become Nightmares." And he wrote, "Very few who took part in that struggle will be there." And he meant the 75th anniversary of that. It took place in Normandy last summer. "Very few will be there. Most now rest in their graves. And memories of that day steadily slip away into the long night. Each day, several hundred World War II veterans pass away. And those remaining are in their 90s. Soon, none will be left, and the world will be poor for it." So let's go back in time for just a minute and try to set the scene. It's the month of June in 1940, 80 years ago. Just imagine, if you can, that a raging lunatic, a mad dictator, has taken control of your country. Now, that's what can happen when you see something like an economic collapse or a Great Depression. That is what happened in Germany in the 1930s. The mad dictator, of course, was Adolf Hitler. Now, this Corporal Hitler is kind of like a raging beast. With the German army, he begins this brutal program of invasion and conquest of the surrounding nations. First, the Germans march into Austria, seeking what they call Lebensraum, living space, for the German people. Next, they invade Czechoslovakia. Now, the Western powers do nothing, which is a big mistake. The memories of World War I are very fresh, and Britain and France have the attitude of peace at all costs. Well, appeasement, as we will see, is not always the best policy. Next to be invaded by Hitler is Poland. Here the West does take a stand. They say, "If you invade, we will declare war." And that's exactly what happens. In 3 weeks, the Nazi war machine rolls over Poland, and Britain and France declare war. World War II has begun. Now, I think it's interesting to note at this juncture, and I think this has probably been mentioned in other messages here in the Front Range recently, but just how suddenly, how quickly our world can change. These invasions we were discussing happened very quickly within just a year or two, 1938, 1939. And certainly this coronavirus lockdown has showed us how simple things we take for granted, like the freedom to meet here at church, can be turned upside down. I'd like to ask you to turn in your Bibles we'll follow Mr. Allsbrook's example here and turn to the book of Daniel, Daniel 2 and verse 20. Daniel 2 and verse 20. Look at the further adventures of Daniel. Now, this is the chapter where King Nebuchadnezzar has a troubling dream. None of his wise men can interpret that. And in a fit of rage, Nebuchadnezzar is basically, well, off with their heads, you know, execute the lot of them. Daniel happened to be among their number, one of the captives of Judah. And Daniel prays about the situation. I can imagine he prayed quite fervently about the situation. And God does reveal the secret of this dream. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His. And He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. It is He who reveals the deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells in Him." This prophecy clearly reveals that God's hand is behind the broad stroke of history, and that it is God who reveals the meaning of prophecies. Now let's turn over just a few pages to Daniel 7. Look at verse 17. Daniel 7 and verse 17. Now this takes place during the reign of another king of Babylon, Belshazzar. This is where Daniel is given the vision of the four beasts. Now we don't need to wonder about what this vision means, because the interpretation of it is given very clearly. Here in verse 17, let's look at that. "Those great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth." Four world-ruling empires. Now, I think most of us that have been in the church are probably familiar with a very clear historical interpretation. Those four world-ruling empires. There was Babylon, there was Medo-Persia, and there was Greece, and then there was Rome. Now let's look at verse 7, Daniel 7, and verse 7. "And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. And it was different from all the other beasts that were before it." Now, some centuries later, after this prophecy was given, during the lifetime of Jesus Christ, it was the Roman Empire which ruled the civilized world. Of course, this empire's had a number of resurrections and rebirths. And here, as we consider the war, which was begun by Adolf Hitler and his Nazi henchmen, we do see a beast-like power. You know, you might picture, you know, a jaguar or a mountain lion violently attacking its prey and, you know, tearing it to pieces. Now, I don't know if any of you have looked at some of the more detailed history of that era. It's certainly not for the faint of heart, but maybe if you see films like Schindler's List. When I lived in Los Angeles, I visited the Holocaust Museum there, and I remember I visited Yad Vashem when I was in Jerusalem. But this passage in Daniel does seem to be a perfect description of that Nazi empire, a beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong with huge iron teeth. You know, you might think of the Blitzkrieg with a mobile tank warfare or those Stuka dive bombers. And, you know, back in 1940, this beast power was devouring and breaking in pieces many nations in Europe. Austria, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Norway, Denmark. And verse 7 also says, "and trampling the residue with its feet." Well, just think of what happened to the remaining Jewish population in those countries, in camps like Auschwitz and Dachau. Well, back to the timeline. Next, Hitler turns his aggression to the West on a blitzkrieg attack, May of 1940, into Belgium and Holland and France. Now, this German army seems unstoppable. The British and French are caught totally off guard. It's a surprise attack with tanks rolling through the hills and forests of the Ardennes. And in just 2 weeks, this German army reaches the Atlantic coast with hundreds and thousands of young men, British and French soldiers, trapped on a narrow strip of beach at a place called Dunkirk. Maybe some of you have been there. Now, there was a film a few years back with Kenneth Branagh, which did an excellent job of recreating what that experience was like. But this was certainly a dark hour, those young men trapped on that beach. You know, the British soldiers are completely surrounded by the German army. You know, the situation was desperate. Really, their only one hope of being saved from destruction was a rescue from boats at sea. Well, I can guarantee you there's a lot of prayer on those beaches at Dunkirk. You know, be not thou far from me, O Lord. O my strength, haste thee to help me. O my God, I trust in thee. Let me not be ashamed. Let not my enemies triumph over me. But God grant me strength, my goodness, my fortress, my high tower and my deliverer, my shield and he in whom I trust. Of course, all those words are taken directly from the Psalms. There was a lot of prayer in the churches and cathedrals across England. It was much more of a religious nation back then. You can imagine if you were a mother or father and your son was stranded on that beach at Dunkirk. Well, I do believe those prayers were answered. The call for help went out. Winston Churchill ordered Operation Dynamo, and suddenly you began to see hundreds of small motorboats, yachts, cabin cruisers, barges, even fishing boats racing across the English Channel to rescue those troops. And this wasn't the Navy. This was just everyday citizens, you know, people like you and me. Strangely, the English Channel became very calm, and mysterious cloud cover moved in, which made it difficult for the German planes to attack those soldiers on that beach. Well, this is known in history books as the miracle of Dunkirk. This wasn't expected to happen, but 348,000, mostly British and French troops, were evacuated safely. You know, the British army, battered and wounded, had escaped to fight another day. Now, at the same time, Winston Churchill had just become the Prime Minister of Britain. He couldn't have possibly picked a worse time. This was right when those troops, those German troops, were streaming across Western Europe. And England now stood alone, with its back to the wall. That mad dictator who'd conquered all of Western Europe now set his sights on Britain. But Churchill was not a man who would cower or tremble in fear before this beast. And after that miraculous escape at Dunkirk, you know, the Prime Minister was speaking to their parliament, their House of Commons. And Churchill said, wars are not won by evacuations. But there was a victory inside this deliverance, which should be noted: our thankfulness at the escape of our army. Churchill here was fulfilling a biblical principle, and I'd like us to look at that in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 16. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 16. The Apostle Paul is giving some Christian living principles here. Churchill realized that God's hand was in this escape. Verse 16, "Rejoice always, pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." Certainly something that we here in 2020 might strive to emulate as well, regardless of what state we might find ourselves in. But Churchill, he said, our thankfulness at the escape of our army must not blind us to the fact that what happened in France and Belgium was a colossal military disaster, and we must expect another blow to be struck immediately. At this point, Churchill announced that Britain would fight. "We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills." At this point, Churchill, being a bit of a comedian, turned aside and said, "And if we can't do that, we'll hit them over the head with bottles. We shall never surrender. And even if this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas would carry on the struggle until in God's good time, the new world, that's all of us, with all of its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and liberation of the old." And of course, that is exactly how World War II played out. Now, there's a good friend of mine lives out in Pasadena. His father, was a longtime pastor for the Worldwide Church of God. And at times in years past, we would attend the feast together over in England. On one of those occasions, this pastor told us quite a gripping story about how when he was 5 years old, his parents put him on a train to unknown parts of northern England, how he was received into the home of distant relatives, people that were strangers to him, and how he's given a new last name. You see, the Blitz was coming, and many young children, about a million of them, children and school teachers, were being evacuated in hopes of saving some lives. Now, Mr. Jones wrote me just last month, and he said, "Stephen, your memory of my memories is pretty good. I was born in 1935 and lived in Epsom, just south of London. I remember the declaration of war in 1939. I was age 4, and I have very vivid memories of the Blitz. Every night, for what seemed like forever, at about 11 p.m., the sirens would wail, and our family made the long walk out to the dugout, the underground shelter, sometimes with dogfights raging overhead." Of course, in 1940, planes were a relatively new invention. Bombing from the air was a new phenomenon. So there was a big expectation that London would be devastated. Sandbags were being piled up. Gas masks were being issued. Even mass graves were being dug. And once again, Winston Churchill, this dark hour, tried to buoy the morale of the British people. "Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth lasts for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour." Now, before crossing the English Channel and invading, it became very clear to Hitler that he would have to control the airspace over Britain. So the Fuhrer issued a directive. He said, "The German Air Force is to overcome the British Air Force with all means at its disposal and as soon as possible." So the Battle of Britain was on. These two powers struggled for 4 months, from June through October of 1940, England and Germany, in what was by far the greatest air battle ever fought. You know, as Mr. Jones said in his email to me, you know, at times, if you lived in the south of England, you could look up in the sky and see literally hundreds, sometimes even more than 1,000 Spitfires, Messerschmitts, dodging, weaving, firing, shooting each other out of the sky, battling it out to see who would rule over the English Channel. Now, the German planes outnumbered the British 3-1. So what an amazing situation. Not only the fate of Britain, but pretty much the fate of Western civilization hinged on the efforts of just a handful of young college-age kids. You know, I researched this. Their average age was 20. Just young kids willing to hurl themselves into the jaws of death, willing to fight this intense air battle at speeds up to 400 miles per hour. You know, of course, many did not come back alive. It certainly took a great amount of courage to do this. Now, just like ancient King David as he went out to fight Goliath against such overwhelming odds. Well, this victory, this Battle of Britain, was another one of the miracles of World War II. For the first time, Hitler had been stopped. His plans of further conquest had been halted. Britain had been saved. This was the first victory in the fight for freedom. It became an important turning point in the war. Now, bringing it back to our time today, most generations have experienced times of difficulty, stress. My parents lived through the Great Depression, World War II. And yet, compared to what they had to deal with, we've had it pretty good since the 1950s. You know, the developed world has enjoyed a higher standard of living than ever before. Even, I think, the poorest people among us, you know, have air conditioning, cars, smartphones. Well, a few years ago, the Church of England gave a special service, which was a memorial to those men who fought in the Battle of Britain. And I'd like to quote from that service just briefly. The bishop said, "Today we honor the men and women who fought in the Battle of Britain, those who were up in the air. The fact that our celebrations still include a church service means that we have not forgotten that this was not simply about what we have done. We recognize that behind the reality of human history, there is another reality, an eternal reality. And we give thanks to God for his merciful act of deliverance. There are times, of course, when we must confront evil with force. World War II and the Battle of Britain seemed to be one of those occasions when there was no other option." Now, he went on to say, "I suspect that it was not insignificant that at a time of national crisis, our leaders and our people turned to God. Once those bombing raids started over London, King George VI, who's the father of the current Queen Elizabeth, called for a national day of prayer. You know, there were 7 of those days of prayer held during World War II, one of them during the evacuation at Dunkirk. But these were serious events. Shops were closed. Men and women of faith appealed to God for help. Even the king and queen attended special services at Westminster Abbey." So in this Church of England service, there's a passage of scripture which was quoted, which I'd like for us to look at as well. It's found in 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 15. 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 15. Now, this is the passage about Elisha and his servant. You know, they're being hunted by the king of Syria, who thinks that Elisha is a spy. We read in verse 15 that they rose up early and went out. There was an entire army surrounding the city with horses and chariots, much like that British army was surrounded on the beach at Dunkirk. And the servant said, "You know, Master, what are we going to do?" Verse 16, Elisha answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Well, the servant must have thought, what in the world is he talking about? There are two of us against an entire army. Verse 17, and Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Well, brethren, there is a visible world which we can see, but there is also a deeper spiritual reality, another dimension to what is happening in human history. And just because we don't always see it doesn't mean that it's not there. Well, as we begin to head towards a conclusion today, in Matthew 24, Jesus Christ gave a very clear prophecy of signs of the end of the age. He said just before his return, there would be wars and rumors of wars. Now, might that include race war, civil war within our own borders? In recent months, we've seen quite a bit of rioting, of violence, of looting, police stations being burned down. And as horrible as that situation was that touched all of this out, and by the way, as a side note, I do realize there is new evidence coming to light showing that there was possibly a lot of drugs involved with this victim, and that, well, let's just say even if the police, even if there was some wrongdoing there, you know, the question that comes to mind is, how do so many other wrongs make a right? Well, they don't. They simply compound the problem. War, in whatever form it might take, is a horrible thing. Violence, such as we've been seeing in our big cities, is a horrible thing. Now, a little over a month from now, the Feast of Tabernacles, we will picture the end to all warfare, the return of Jesus Christ to establish a true and lasting world peace. Jesus also said, "See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass." It seems to me, brethren, that these are not normal times that we're living through. We have political division in this country. As I said, we've seen rioting, looting, attacks on police. We have a fearful viral pandemic. We see the slippage of biblical values. You know, in recent months, we've seen locusts swarming across East Africa, wildfires that have ravaged Australia, and of course, for that matter, as we read in the update last night, you know, we see hundreds of wildfires burning in California right now, over a million acres, smoke reaching all the way here to Denver, as we all know quite well. Well, Jesus said these things would happen. He said there would be earthquakes and famines and, yes, disease epidemics. And I don't know that these things necessarily need to occur in any specific orderly timeline, in any preset chronological order. Now, we're also told as Christians to watch and pray always that we might be accounted worthy to escape all these things, and to stand before the Son of Man at His return. And that's a very real hope that we in the Church of God have. Of course, the watch and pray admonition is something that we would do well to heed here in this fateful year of 2020. As Christians, we must always remember that we are in a type of spiritual warfare. Before we close, let's look at Ephesians 6 and verse 10. Ephesians 6 and verse 10. Apostle Paul is writing here, and he says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." Well, certainly, at least from an economic point of view, these are evil days, these are difficult days that we're living through. Many are out of work. Businesses are shutting down. Our government has printed so many trillions of dollars that our national debt is far beyond the point where it can ever be repaid or where all of its obligations can be met. Many experts are now predicting that a new debt crisis could develop, and that our national economy, in spite of what politicians may be saying, could be in serious trouble. Well, certainly, with everything going on around us, I think this is a good time for us all to pray for the survival of our nation. After all, we do still have a divisive election ahead of us in about 2 months. We are told to be strong. It took a great amount of effort and sacrifice for people like my dad, my Uncle Jack, the Greatest Generation, to defeat Hitler in World War II. You know, a lot of hardship had to be endured. You know, people like Mr. Jones or Cousin Tony. Now we may have our own battles to fight. You know, there may come a time when we too need to take a stand against evil. And we're told to not lose heart, to be strong in the Lord. You know, one of the lessons, I can't help but thinking that we could learn from all this, and I include myself as well, is simply that we should all be more humble as human beings. We don't have all the answers. We haven't built a society that's as strong as we would like to imagine. In fact, it's very fragile. It could collapse overnight with something like a bank freeze, you know, a failure in the food supply chain, solar flare, even an EMP attack, which would take out the power grid. And suddenly, it'd be like we were living in third world conditions, or perhaps more accurately, like the dark ages of medieval Europe. No, mankind does not have the answers to solve the problems facing our world today. Only God in heaven does. Let's close with one final scripture found in 2 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 9. 2 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 9. I do think you'll find this encouraging. These are the words given to the seer to pass along to Asa, who was the king of Judah at the time. And in verse 8 he says, "Because you relied on the Lord, He delivered your enemies into your hand." Verse 9 is one let's take to heart. "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show Himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to Him." Brethren, we don't need to be afraid. We don't need to fear. There will be light at the end of this crisis, however long it might last. God is watching, and these words are just as true for us today as they were in ancient Israel and ancient Judah. So let's be strong in the Lord and the power of His might, and put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand.